Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Nabil Biagio, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the stories making news across South Sudan this Thursday, November 11th, 2021. Armed assailants killed four people and abducted five children in Jonglei State.
There are four boys and one girl were abducted. And then one woman were injured.
And the South Sudan Civil Aviation Authority has banned the operations of several Antonov aircraft.
We are still negotiating with the government on how best and how amicably we can solve and resolve this particular matter.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Jonglei State authorities say armed assailants killed at least four people, wounded three others, and abducted five children in two separate incidents in Duke County Tuesday evening. The Jonglei State Minister for Local Government and Law Enforcement says armed men from the area are pursuing the attackers, who are suspected of being from the Greater Pibor administrative area. But an official in Greater Pibor says he has no knowledge of the attack in Duke County. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Simon Huthdul, the Jonglei State Minister of Local Government and Law Enforcement, says in the first incident, seven people were ambushed Tuesday as they traveled from Patuanoi village of Paiwel Payam to Panyang Payam in Duke County. Three died in the attack and two were injured. Dul says in the second incident, another group of armed assailants abducted five children and wounded a woman.
There were a Yabo group, which is from Paiwel Payam, the other side of the Popoktap, whereby the four boys and one girl were abducted, and then one woman were injured.
Dwol says men from Duke County are pursuing the attackers who are heading east toward the neighboring Greater Pibor administrative area. Dwol says authorities suspect that armed men from Greater Pibor are hiding in areas around Jonglei. He says they are suspected of being responsible for several recent attacks and ambushes. Dwol urged the authorities in Pibor to persuade the men to return to their area, warning that communities in Jonglei may retaliate. Jai Adingoro Alwal, the Minister of Information in the Greater Pibor Administrative Area, says he is not aware of the incidents in Duke County. However, Alwal says Pibor Chief Administrator Lokali Ameya and Jonglei State Governor Dinei Chagur currently are in Juba for a meeting convened by the United Nations missions in South Sudan to find ways to staff the insecurity in the Jonglei region.
They have not yet come out with the resolutions. What I know, they have started yesterday and today. They are still on negotiations. Actually, it is a kind of peace confrontations where now they are the two of them, the government of the Jonglei State and the chief administrator, talking in order to find solutions for the ongoing conflict in Jonglei and also in Greater Pibor.
At least three people were killed and two others were injured in Panyagur of Twitch East County late on Monday. Greater Pibor Chief Administrator Ameya said he did not know about the incident in Panyagur, but added that he could not rule out the possibility that the assailants came from Pibor. Ameya also called on the national government to expedite the disarmament planned in Greater Jonglei to prevent armed civilians from harming each other. Last week, Chief Administrator Ameya of Greater Pibor, Jonglei Governor Dinei Chagur, and other officials met in Bor, where they reiterated their commitment to an agreement that aims to foster peace and security among their local populations. The agreement includes steps to improve working relations and implement measures such as the return of abductees and compensation to families of those who have been killed. For VOA News, I am Deng Guiding in Bor.
The South Sudan Civil Aviation Authority has grounded several Antonov aircraft and ordered the owners to remove the planes from South Sudan within 5 days. The head of South Sudan Civil Aviation Authority says the decision was based on the maintenance records of the planes following the recent crash of an Antonov An-26 that killed 5 people near Juba Airport. Aircraft owners say the decision is unfair. Winnie Chirino files this report for VOA from Juba.
The Safety Oversight Committee of the South Sudan Civil Aviation Authority recommended the immediate revocation of air operation permits for Antonov 24, Antonov 26, Antonov 28 and Antonov 30 Hawkers, HS-748 and LET 410 UVP. It grants an exception for United Nations flights using Antonovs. The planes are to leave this week. But Kat Monjok, Chief Executive Officer and Managing Director of Optimum Aviation, says his company owns one Antonov 28 that he thinks was wrongly ordered to leave South Sudan. Monjok, who is also the Acting Secretary General for Information at the South Sudan Airline Operations Association, says there has been no record of any accident involving Antonov 28 in South Sudan because it is one of the newest Antonovs. Monjok says the South Sudan Airline Operators Association hopes to persuade the Civil Aviation Authority to let all the Antonovs stay in service.
We are still negotiating with the government on how best and how amicably we can solve and resolve this particular matter. Because, you understand the dynamic of our country, the status that our country is in. Reason being, you know that 80% or 85% of our population outside Juba are not accessible by roads. These areas can only be accessed by air transportation, and that one put it as a fact that we cannot do away with air transportation or Antonovs as means of transportation.
Monjok says the government should understand that the companies use Antonov aircraft for cargo and they rarely carry passengers. He says if the government bans all Antonov aircraft, it will jeopardize the economy and affect the lives of people in 9 states that rely on air transportation for cargo. Monjok says the majority of the airstrips in South Sudan don't accommodate more modern aircraft because they don't have enough space and good runways.
These are the most durable and the most aircraft that are designed with this particular type of setup or environment that we have in South Sudan, because they go anywhere. They could land in a short runway. They go to places like Walgad, Matot, Azo, like Maridi, Kwajok, places like Rang, Ida, Akobo, all these places within South Sudan, and no any other modern aircraft can go to those places. So if we do away with we said we are stopping the Antonov, all these places outside Juba, they are going to be seriously affected.
Monjok says in the aviation industry, the age of the craft does not matter. He says internationally, only about 20% of crashes are due to a mechanical issue and the rest are due to human error, weather or even radar systems. He says rather than ban Antonov aircrafts due to maintenance records, the government should set up a service center in the country where it can regulate the maintenance of aircraft. Subek David Dada, CEO of South Sudan Civil Aviation Authority, says the airlines have tried to negotiate with the authority, but he says they will not allow to keep the Antonovs now because the country has lost several lives in the Antonov crashes.
Now, they want a hangar to be done so that their aircraft are not sent out for maintenance or in service. This hangar, how long will it take to build and equip it to the standard that is required so that their aircraft are taken there for service and maintenance? So it means that during this time, they want to continue operation, which at the same time endangering our safety of our citizens. We cannot tolerate that. We cannot wait. It is better they go and maintain this aircraft somewhere, service them.
Dada says he cannot confirm if the Antonovs will be allowed to return if they go outside South Sudan for service, but he says operators can reapply for permits if they can show the Antonovs are safe. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
And from Juba, we move to Ethiopia, where the United Nations says it is seeking an explanation for the arrest and detention of some 70 truck drivers contracted by the UN and other aid groups since November 3rd in the city of Semera. The gateway for aid convoys is struggling to reach the Tigray region. The action is the latest slap at the world body after the recent expulsion of 7 UN staffers and the detention of at least 16 local employees. This as tensions continue over what officials call a de facto humanitarian blockade on the Tigray region. For more, Chinedu Ofor reach VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir.
The 70 truckers who have been detained have been so, we believe, over a few days. It wasn't all just today, but the UN is being a little vague on details. They're contractors the UN has hired to drive aid convoys into Tigray, and they work for both the United Nations and for some international NGOs. So, of course, the UN is not at all happy about this. First of all, want the aid to get into Tigray. I mean, no aid has gotten into that region in almost 4 weeks now, and the situation is dire. There's more than 5 million people who need assistance, medical help and food primarily. But UN spokesman Stéphane Dujarric said on Wednesday that they're continuing to work and to engage with the federal government and Addis to secure the release of all the detained people, both the contractors and the UN staff. And it's important to point out these are national staffers that work for the UN, in other words, Ethiopian nationals.
There is a back and forth between the UN and Ethiopia as to the reasons for this arrest. Some allege that it's been ethnically targeted, and the Ethiopian government is saying it's not.
I think it's important to say that the United Nations has made no accusations towards the federal government of Ethiopia whatsoever, publicly. The UN has said publicly that they're trying to get an explanation for why their staffers have been arrested. A spokesman was asked this week, the UN has made clear that these are Ethiopians first. They're not talking about anybody's ethnicity here. That's not an issue for the United Nations. They're saying these are UN staff and they're Ethiopians. They have made no accusations in public against the federal government. There are reports from the ground that the government has stepped up its detentions of ethnic Tigrayans, but this is not an accusation the United Nations has made.
The UN, even the African Union, talked about a little opening for some kind of solution to this crisis, especially with anti-government forces setting their sights on Addis Ababa. Since then, what has happened?
Well, the United Nations has warned this week that the country could slide into a civil war. They're very concerned about it. They don't want to see this fighting spread towards Addis or anywhere else for that matter. Their envoy, their humanitarian chief, the UN's humanitarian chief, Martin Griffiths, was in the capital and also in Tigray in the last few days. He's back in New York now. Really, the two main goals, and I would put them on an equal parallel, the two main goals of the United Nations are to get aid into the people who need it in every part of Ethiopia. And the second goal is to stop the fighting. And that's where it stands for them. They're not interested in who's right and who's wrong and who's good and who's bad. The point is, everybody needs to come to the table and the weapons need to stop firing.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, an Amnesty International report documents forced evictions of indigenous people in Uganda. Find out more on that story after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how is the birth of a child celebrated in your culture?
When we give birth in our culture, they simply take a baby somewhere there inside a house. They gather together as a family. They bring pots of milk. They slaughter goats. So they dance. That's how we easily celebrate.
I understand in a very simple way that when a baby boy is born, it is celebrated for the first 3 days with some local drinks, some local beverages, something of that kind.
They give them cows. Yeah. Once you give birth to a baby, they give him or her cattle. So that's the way how they celebrate it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. A court in South Africa ruled Wednesday that former Mozambique Finance Minister Manuel Chang should be extradited to the United States instead of returning him to Mozambique. Chang is accused of involvement in criminal offenses amounting to $2 billion. Also in Mozambique, President Filipe Nyusi on Wednesday dismissed Defense Minister Gemma Neto without explanation. VOA's James Betty reached Martina Perino at the U.S.-based Democracy International to discuss the recent developments in Mozambique.
I think it's a very significant ruling. It really demonstrates that South Africa is behaving according to their laws and constitution. And I think that's a very important sign of rule of law and abiding by the rule of law in Southern Africa. I think the former minister has been accused of international crimes, and therefore he should go and face the charges. And he has the right to a fair trial, and I strongly believe he will have it. I also think it's very important to know that he's innocent until proven guilty. And therefore, I look forward to seeing how the trial evolves and then what the court defines.
The South African Justice Minister has said that the former finance minister should be sent back to Mozambique. What is the difference between him coming to the United States and being sent back to Mozambique?
The Mozambican government has requested for him to be extradited to Mozambique. The former minister is being accused also in Mozambique of alleged corruption and other crimes. He also has a pending case in Mozambique. Well, however, the case in the U.S. started first. So it's pretty common that he should go and face those charges first. He might still be found innocent in the U.S. and then he'll have to travel back to Mozambique. At that point, he can definitely stand trial in Mozambique. And I would look forward to that.
How much money are we talking about?
We're talking about a $2 billion loan that was contracted in a non-conventional manner, not in line with our rules and regulations and legislation. $2 billion is really significant for Mozambique. The amount itself, if you think that the GDP when this was contracted was $11 billion, you can imagine that $2 billion are very consequential for the country.
Let's go to this other breaking news on Mozambique, that President Nyusi has fired the defense minister, Jaime Neto. Is that his name? What do you make of that?
It's very interesting development. Minister Neto doesn't have an extensive experience in the defense sector. He was previously a member of parliament of Frelimo, the ruling party, and he was appointed to Minister of Defense. I think the timing is very interesting. I would love to, I really wish the government of Mozambique would sit down with journalists and explain their rationale. I would love to understand the president's rationale and why he made this decision. It's important to note that nobody else has been appointed. It seems that he was dismissed yesterday. So I think it's a very important position to be Minister of Defense in Mozambique, as we are in conflict. One of the provinces of Mozambique is engulfed in a conflict for the past years. So it's a very important role.
Martina, I mean, as you said, the president did not give a reason for removing the defense minister. But since he was defense minister when the war against the Islamists started, could it be that maybe he is being fired because he did not do a good job?
I believe Minister Neto was appointed in January 2020. The war in Cabo Delgado escalated during his watch, yes, or the conflict in Cabo Delgado escalated during his watch, but it really started in 2017. But I'm not sure what the implication and how responsible he is for that escalation.
Like many nations hit by COVID-19, South Africa has seen rising unemployment and hunger since the onset of the pandemic. For VOA News, Linda Giftash in Johannesburg reports one school, the Green Business College, is tackling these issues with innovative ways, giving people the skills to not only grow their own produce, but also make money to help their families and build their careers.
At a community center east of Johannesburg, more than 24 students are learning skills that would have been common among their grandparents' generation. The Green Business College is teaching them the basics of organic gardening and food preservation by making jams and sauces. For some, it is expanding on hobbies they discovered while in pandemic lockdown. It is also feeding their entrepreneurial aspirations. Onkopotse Sileka founded the company Uncle OG's Jams.
It's a lost art completely. Most of my peers around my age, they'd rather buy than make. I want to probably get to a point where that I can make a sustainable living from preserving marula fruit.
Making an empire of his late grandmother's jam recipe would be a major career change for the 32-year-old, who currently works for a sporting apparel retailer. Other students are hoping the skills will simply get them into the workforce. More than 30% of South Africans are jobless. College CEO Matsupiso Makabane believes the school's courses, which include beekeeping, can inspire people to create their own employment opportunities while addressing issues that come with poverty.
They say, give a man a fish, you have fed him for the day. Teach him how to fish, you have fed him for a lifetime. It's all about power. Take back your power and use it where, invest it in your soil is going to benefit you so that people can come and buy from you and buy health.
South Africa suffers from what experts call a double burden of malnutrition, experiencing extremes of both hunger and obesity. Small farms like the one set up by the college are viewed as part of the solution to providing healthy food to communities. Lisa Corsten is a plant pathology professor at the University of Pretoria.
We believe in shifting people, their whole diet to consuming more fresh produce, to produce more food within their communities. And then obviously a look at food gardens that to us will be a very important critical element of South Africa's mindset. Produce your own food as well and not only rely on the food system.
More than 120 students have studied at the main college in downtown Johannesburg in the past year, while many more have participated in workshops around South Africa. Graduates have used their creativity to expand beyond selling vegetables and jams. Tsipitso Moloi's line of hot sauces include a pineapple-infused variety and a ghost pepper sauce with an extreme kick.
It starts as a hobby, and then how do you then graduate that hobby into a business that you can live out of? But I wouldn't have been able to have had the knowledge around preservation that I got from the school. I wouldn't have had the momentum to keep it going, because that mentorship and coaching keeps you on the alert.
And in less than 4 months since launching, she's had two butcher shops request her products for their shelves. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
A report by Amnesty International documents several violent forced evictions in Uganda of the Benet indigenous people. Affected members of the community narrate details of the eviction from their ancestral land, saying it took place without notice and they are asking the Ugandan government to compensate them. Halima Uthmani reports from Kampala.
Men, women and children from Eastern Congo are being registered and assessed at the Kisoro District Transit Center. 22-year-old Anja Nema, speaking to VOA by phone, says her village of Kibaya was rocked by gunfire and this forced them to flee. She says she and others had a very rough journey. She says they suffered going on foot and having to run with their belongings, getting exhausted. She says they could not find a place to sleep and had to sleep out in the cold. It was intense, she says. Fighting is reported between armed groups in the areas of Shanzu and Runyonyi near Congo's Virunga Mountains, leading to the exodus. The United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR, says the fighting has forced 11,000 people to flee into Uganda since late Sunday. Kisoro District Red Cross Branch Manager Natkunda Primrose says many of the refugees slept at the border because there were no vehicles to transport them to a school facility that is being used as a transit center in the town of Nyakabande.
they are tired, and most of them were coming in with just maybe a mat, a mattress, and maybe their animals like the sheep, the goats. They need support, and I don't think they've even had anything to eat.
Rukundo Manase, the Kisoro District Disaster Management Committee chairperson, calls the situation at the border alarming. Rukundo says the refugees need protective gear, medicine, food, water, and washing facilities. He also says they need tracing services, especially for misplaced children.
That number is a bit abnormal. We have never handled such big numbers before. What we are working on is closely with the UNHCR to see if they can come in quickly, and for those who are willing to move to camps, and they are picked away.
UNHCR says together with the Ugandan government, they have so far relocated about 500 asylum seekers to the Nyakabande Transit Center, which can accommodate up to 1,500 people. UNHCR officials are concerned that the local capacity and services may be soon overwhelmed and request urgent resources to address the needs of the new arrivals. The agency says so far this year, it has received only 45% of the funding for its operations in Uganda, a country that hosts some 1.4 million refugees, more than any other in Africa. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
And that's all we have for you this Thursday. I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your vehicles, homes, and on your phones. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect yourself and others from coronavirus. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for COVID-19. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
mama tabu mala shiridi itageni ma imani kawia imani bita mara roho bitakide roho bita mama itashilukulu haja besi uodi figida mutaala ah, shukran. Sasida la hadi zemi shipi waga jere jere shedidi kalamu tamisha kulia hashani ali mabi korejani hashani mabi mutumin ayani itamaindura hazeitenas lakin piroho insania